Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. We're going to start with an article from AARP, the magazine. Up front, the A-list, 7 things Sharon Stone suggests doing now. People will try to assume power over you by taking things away. But if you're clear about your own purpose, intention, soul, and heart, nobody can take anything. This is Sharon Stone speaking. She's 63. 1. Express yourself. I've written poetry all my life and some short stories and songs. And then I did comedian Mark Morone's podcast, and people said, she's a lot more interesting than we thought. So I wrote a memoir. It was an agonizing process. 2, let go. I show up on time. I know my lines. I go out and sell the film. Then they say, you're difficult. The industry is built to keep women oppressed. I'm over it. 3, forget the ice pick. I don't think Basic Instinct's Catherine Trammell was sexy. She was a manipulative sociopath, and fear doesn't turn me on. I find super authentic people sexy, people who are quirky or unusual. 4, you be you. God knows I swear. God knows I've had sex. God knows who I am. I don't have to pretend. 5, wear a mask. Yes, still. Please, my sister, Kelly, and her husband, Bruce, got COVID. Kelly sort of recovered, but Bruce nearly died. One night he said, I'm not going to make it. I stayed on the phone with him for hours. 6, embrace family. I tell my kids, you're going to have lots of friends in your life, but your family will be yours for a lifetime. You won't always talk to each other, but even then, you'll love them. And if you need someone, that's who you call. 7, stay focused. I've survived everything. Sexual harassment, miscarriages, a brain bleed, divorce, a lightning strike. I don't have time to fool around. I'm here to be a healthy and present parent, a good daughter, and an engaged citizen. Everything else is just a distraction. This was as told to Natasha Stoyanov. And now we're going on to health immunity, protect yourself. And actually, these are the last episodes in this magazine. And next time we'll go on to something else. So, can taking probiotics help with seasonal allergies? Here's how your gut and your allergies could be linked. If you're up on your health and wellness news, you know that gut health has been linked to both physical and mental health, and that probiotics are one of the most popular ways to boost your microbiome, the collection of bacteria living in your gut. In fact, it often seems like probiotics are recommended to help treat virtually every health issue, from acne to digestive problems to depression. So why not seasonal allergies too? Here's what experts have to say. How allergies and your gut are linked. If you have allergies, you probably already know that allergies and your immune system are connected. But what may surprise you is that the link between your gut and seasonal allergies is actually quite strong. We live because of air, food, and water intake, explains Gregor Reed, PhD chief scientist at Seed, a startup that develops probiotics. The gut is considered the center of our immune system, which also spans our airways, skin, and other parts of our bodies. This system was built from birth by microbes that taught the immune cells to know the difference between part of the family and foreign invaders, Reed says. Pollen, for example, is like one of those invaders for some people, and the system detects it and responds by trying to flush it out. Thus, sneezing, watery eyes, and nose. This set of symptoms is also known as allergic rhinitis. So, do probiotics help with allergies? While the gut is definitely implicated in allergies, it's a bit of a leap to conclude that because your gut and your allergies are related, taking probiotics will help ease your seasonal symptoms. But research does suggest there might be something to the idea. Although the exact mechanism isn't understood, probiotics may help promote the regulatory rather than inflammatory immune response to allergens, said Eliza Eiling, MD. She's a head and neck surgeon at Indiana University Health. In other words, probiotics might help your body avoid that allergic response you normally have to dust, pollen, mites, or whatever your seasonal allergy triggers are. Several randomized controlled trials have shown the benefits of oral probiotics in the treatment of seasonal allergies in adults and children. However, this is in addition to traditional allergy treatment with antihistamines and nasal steroid sprays, says Dr. Eiling. So basically, probiotics can help, but you probably don't want to ditch your regular allergy meds just yet. And while anyone familiar with medical research can tell you that it's possible to find a study that proves virtually anything, the studies on this topic are relatively solid. The level of evidence to support the idea that probiotics may help with seasonal allergies is actually quite high, she notes. Approximately 28 randomized controlled trials and systematic reviews published since 2002 demonstrate improved quality of life and nasal eye allergy symptom scores for probiotic use compared to placebo. Of course, all studies have limitations, and the symptoms of allergies, runny nose, itchy eyes, headache, are pretty subjective. So it's important to take this research with a grain of salt. Still, the studies are very promising. Not all strains are created equal. There are many kinds of probiotics, all featuring different strains or types of bacteria. Different strains have been shown to help with different health issues, and allergies are no exception. The most commonly studied probiotics for treating seasonal allergies include two species, with 19 and 6 studies respectively, said Dr. Eiling. Other probiotics may also be helpful, but the data is lacking to recommend for or against the other strains. And these two are Lactobacillus and Bifidobacterium. Hope I said that right. It's important to note, though, that thanks to the uniqueness of each person's gut bacteria, different strains might work for different people. Our gut microbial patterns is just as unique as our fingerprint, says Will Belswitz, MD, the gut health MD. There is no one on the planet who has the exact same mix and proportions of bacteria that you do. The challenge is understanding which bacteria strains will fill a needed void or sway the balance in a positive direction on an individual basis given the level of bioindividuality. There also may be some benefit to eating probiotic-rich foods if you're trying to soothe allergies. The studies on the connection between probiotics and the prevention of allergic rhinitis are, more than anything, showing us that gut health is critical to the immune system. While there haven't been studies that specifically show that probiotic-rich foods soothe allergies, a healthy gut generally contributes to a healthy immune system. Therefore, foods that contribute to a healthy gut are likely to contribute to a healthy immune system as well. If you're really suffering, a probiotic pill may be your best immune-boosting option. Many fermented foods, like most yogurts and even sauerkraut, do not have strains of bacteria that survive your stomach acid, says Michael Rosen, MD, Cleveland Clinic's Chief of Wellness. Clinically tested probiotics, on the other hand, are made to survive that trip through your digestive system. Consider giving them a try. So where does this leave us? At the end of the day, doctors do think probiotics can have benefits for people dealing with allergies. Dr. Eiling says she recommends probiotics to patients in addition to conventional medicine for seasonal and perennial allergies, since the potential for benefit is real. But it's important to note that probiotics shouldn't be the first or only thing you try to deal with your allergies. It's unrealistic to expect probiotics to atone for an unhealthy lifestyle, said Dr. Bilsewitz. The first step toward gut health should always be to optimize your diet by consuming a diet that maximizes a diversity of fresh fruits and vegetables. In the end, though, the argument in favor of probiotics is pretty strong. There is no known risk, and there is a potential benefit at an inexpensive dollar cost, said Dr. Rosian. In other words, it's unlikely probiotics will do any harm if used as directed, and there's a decent chance they'll help. So why not give them a try? And one final short article in this magazine, your immunity peaks in the morning. You know the flu shot is the number one way to protect yourself from the virus. But what you may not know is that it's ideal to get jabbed in the morning. In a UK study published in 2016, researchers looked at 276 senior citizens and found that those who got the vaccine between 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. had a greater antibody response to 2 out of 3 flu strains 1 month later than those who got their shot between 3 and 5 p.m. Immune cell numbers and sensitivity to pathogens fluctuate over the course of the day, says Adam Silver, Ph.D., Associate Professor of Biology at the University of Hartford in Connecticut. It's believed that our immune system evolved to be at its peak when we are most likely to encounter pathogens, so it makes sense that we would see a heightened immune response in the morning at the beginning of our active period. Plus, your arms will thank you. Some research has shown that people who get vaccinations early in the day are less likely to experience redness, soreness, or hardness at the injection site. And now we have an article from the Essential Retirement Guide. How Social Security fits into your retirement income plan. Strategic planning is the key to making your savings last. Social Security was never designed to be a pension plan. Rather, it was meant as a form of insurance against abject poverty in old age. Fortunately, most Americans enter retirement with at least some personal resources, such as individual retirement accounts, IRAs, or a 401k to supplement their Social Security income. To live comfortably in retirement, you'll need to make choices about how and when to tap your other available resources. Income or growth? With no more paychecks coming in, you'll need monthly income to pay bills, money that won't disappear if the stock market sinks. But you also need some growth potential to counteract inflation and ensure that you don't outlive your assets. After all, a healthy 65-year-old American could easily live another 30 years, possibly more. Your Social Security benefit is automatically adjusted annually for the cost of living. By some estimates, those adjustments over time actually exceed inflation, which gives your bank account a helpful boost. The bad news? With the average monthly Social Security payment clocking in at $1,503 in 2020, it's probably not enough to pay all your bills, which means you'll need to start tapping your savings right out of the gate. So how do you grow your nest egg and spend it? Carefully. The balancing act. Many financial planners suggest adding up your monthly bills, the stuff you can't cut back on easily, like basic living expenses and health care costs. Deduct your Social Security check from that figure and use your savings to pay for the rest each month. Keep 5 years' worth of those monthly payments in a safe investment vehicle, like government bonds, at all times. You won't get much growth, but you won't lose it in a downturn. The rest of your savings can go into riskier growth investments like stocks, since that way you'll have more time to recover any lost funds before you'll need them. As those investments grow, you'll also reduce the chances that you'll run out of money before you die. Finding fun money. When you budget for your must-have monthly expenses, don't include the fun stuff, like vacations, going to the movies, or dining out. Use your long-term stock market portfolio to pay for those things, and only when the market has been treating you well. If the market hits some turbulence, just sit tight and wait for your savings to recover over time before you start spending money on unnecessary expenses again. What should I spend first? Conventional wisdom says to spend taxable assets like stock and bond portfolios you've bought with after-tax income first, and let tax-deferred assets like traditional and Roth IRAs grow longer. But sometimes it gets complicated, and you may pay less in taxes over the long term by withdrawing proportionally from all of your assets every year. A financial planner or tax professional can help you make the best choice for your specific situation. About those annuities. Annuities are insurance policies that guarantee income. You pay the insurance company a lump sum out of your retirement savings, and they give you a monthly check for the rest of your life, starting either right now or later, depending on the policy. Simple fixed annuities can be useful in a retirement plan, but you'll sacrifice flexibility. You usually can't take your money out of an annuity. If you die young, your heirs won't get your money back at that point either. Variable annuities, which claim to provide growth without risk, are typically more complicated and more expensive. Annuities aren't insured by the FDIC, so if the insurance company goes belly up, you could be out of luck. But many states backstop annuities up to certain amounts, typically $100,000. If the idea of an annuity appeals to you, consult a fee-only financial advisor who is not earning a commission by selling you one. The pension dimension. Pensions aren't what they used to be. Fewer than 25% of American workers have one. But for those who do, these plans can provide income for life. How your pension affects Social Security depends on whether your pension is public or private. Private sector pensions will not affect your Social Security benefit because you paid Social Security taxes on your income. In many cases, though, municipal, state, and federal workers, such as police officers, public school teachers, or court clerks, are exempt from paying Social Security payroll tax since they pay into a pension fund. For them, collecting Social Security benefits would be unfair. Laws vary by state and city, and many local governments do collect Social Security payroll tax from employees, making them eligible for both a pension and Social Security. If an individual, or a married couple has a combination of a public pension and Social Security benefits, the government uses formulas to reduce the total benefits paid out. In general, if you are entitled to both Social Security and a public pension, it's best to start taking one before the other. For example, if your pension starts at age 65, it might make sense to start claiming Social Security at age 62. Social Security doesn't consider someone's pension as earned income, so your pension will not reduce your payments like a salary might if you were still working full-time. But you will still likely pay income tax on your pension, and if your total income is high enough, you could also wind up paying taxes on your Social Security benefits. Should you invest your benefits? Solid stock market returns may tempt you to claim Social Security benefits at age 62, even if you don't need the income. Then simply invest the money in stocks and let it grow. But keep in mind that every year you delay claiming Social Security, your annual benefit will increase by 8%, guaranteed. When wealthy people should claim early, it might make sense for wealthy people to take Social Security right away. Their monthly benefit checks will be lower, but it also means less cash they will need to withdraw from retirement funds, which could save a lot on potential income or capital gains taxes. Since retirees tend to spend more money in early retirement, it's a good idea to reduce taxes in those years when withdrawals are likely to be higher. Social Security doesn't consider capital gains and IRA distribution income when calculating reductions in your benefits from the time you turn 62 until you eventually reach your full retirement age. Now we're going back to AARP, the magazine, and we have 12 new uses for strawberries. Chef Sarah Moulton, host of Sarah's Weeknight Meals on PBS, shares clever ways to enjoy them. There's so much you can do with strawberries in sweet and savory dishes, said TV chef Sarah Moulton, who also co-hosts Milk Street Radio. Samples some of her tempting ideas. Ingredient measurements are to taste unless specified. Rice pilaf. Add diced fresh strawberries, toasted almonds, and chopped parsley to prepared pilaf. Pancakes. Include chopped strawberries in your favorite flapjack recipe. Serve with yogurt. Ice cubes. Try frozen puree in iced tea. Tasty spread. Combine pureed fresh or thawed strawberries with softened unsalted butter and some honey. Frozen yogurt. Pulse 10 ounces of frozen berries in a food processor. Add 7 ounces of Greek yogurt and 3 tablespoons of superfine sugar. Blend smooth. Salsa. Mixed diced berries with lime juice, chopped jalapeno, red onion, and cilantro. Lemonade. Stir in pureed fresh or thawed strawberries before serving over ice. Quick jam. Cook 2 cups of chopped strawberries with 1 tablespoon of orange juice and a pinch of salt on low until the mixture bubbles. Stir in 3 tablespoons of chia seeds and honey to taste. Allow jam to cool. Pastry. Combine chopped berries with sugar. Spoon into squares of packaged puff pastry. Fold as shown, crimp the edges, and bake. Salad. Tossed arugula, blue cheese, or feta if preferred, and salted nuts with quartered strawberries. Dress with olive oil and balsamic vinegar. Salad dressing. Puree 1 cup of strawberries with a pinch of salt, 1 teaspoon of Dijon mustard, and 2 tablespoons of red wine vinegar. Whisk in 2 tablespoons of olive oil. Season with freshly ground pepper. And finally, dessert bites. Cut fresh strawberries in half lengthwise. Scoop out slightly. Just before serving, fill with a mixture of softened cream cheese, a little sugar, chopped dark chocolate, and orange zest. Garnish with grated chocolate and zest. And finally, here's a little sidebar. My favorite tool, a cooking torch. I use mine to caramelize sugar on creme brulee and to char peppers. Melt cheese on top of casseroles, sear salmon, or fire up a wood-burning grill or an oven pile light that's gone out. Now we have a little article under Upfront Go, Getting to Your Airplane. As air travel slowly returns, here's a step-by-step guide to boarding 2021 style. 1. Book your trip. Research whether you'll have to provide proof of a negative COVID-19 test prior to arrival at your destination. Go to covid19.state.gov, then click on country-specific information. Many countries have not been admitting travelers from the U.S. Info on those restrictions is also available at this site. Number 2, checking in from home. Print your boarding pass at home or download it to your smartphone to avoid touching airport kiosks. 3. Setting a schedule. Leave extra time for coronavirus safety procedures and screening at the airport. Allow a minimum of 2 hours for a domestic flight and plan for 3 hours if you're going on an international trip. 4. Riding to the airport. If you can, take a taxi or a ride booking service such as Uber or Lyft, so you won't have to use the multi-passenger shuttle bus from the parking lot to the terminal. 5. Entering the terminal, put on your mask. Passengers are required to wear one except when eating or drinking. 6. Reaching the line, scan your own boarding pass at security checkpoints and show it to the TSA officer for visual inspection. instead of handing it over. Place personal items in your carry-on bag rather than in a plastic bin. 7. Making it through security. Remove food from carry-ons and put it in a separate plastic bin for screening. Liquid restrictions have been eased for hand sanitizer. You can bring up to 12 ounces. Remove it from your bag for separate screening. 8. Boarding the plane. Show your proof of a negative COVID-19 test if needed. 9. Taking your seat. Sanitize the tray, table, and armrests. And here's another little sidebar article. U.S. museums get busy. 3 major openings for your future travel plans. The pandemic has been hard on America's museums, but 2021 brings at least 3 big debuts. Coming soon, the redesigned Hall of Gems and Minerals at New York City's American Museum of Natural History, and the Loom Indianapolis, which will feature an immersive Van Gogh experience at the Indianapolis Museum of Art Galleries at Newfields. Plus, the National Museum of African American Music recently opened in a 56,000 square foot space in downtown Nashville, Tennessee. Now, in the little time we have left, we're going back to my friend from Canada, and we can look at some more of the following, which will likely become reality in the next 10 to 20 years. Most of us won't see the changes, but our kids and grandkids probably will. Gas pumps will go away. Smart major auto manufacturers have already designated money to start building new plants that build only electric cars. Coal industries will go away. Gasoline and oil companies will go away. Drilling for oil will stop. Say goodbye to OPEC. The Middle East is in trouble. Homes will produce and store more electrical energy during the day than they use and will sell it back to the grid. The grid stores it and dispenses it to industries that are high electricity users. Has anyone seen the Tesla roof? A baby of today will see personal cars only in museums. The future is approaching faster than most of us can handle. In 1998, Kodak had 170,000 employees and sold 85% of all photo paper worldwide. Within just a few years, their business model disappeared and they went bankrupt. Who would have thought that would ever happen? What happened to Kodak and Polaroid will happen in a lot of industries in the next 5 to 10 years, and most of us don't see it coming. Well, folks, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.